Hey everybody, I'm Logan Alec. I'm a CPA. I own Choice Tax Relief. We help folks who owe the IRS and or their state at least $10,000 in back tax debt. We represent them before these taxing agencies, and we reach the best possible resolution for them that they qualify for. And one of those resolutions that we routinely get people into with the IRS is a partial payment installment agreement, or PPIA for short. What is a partial payment installment agreement? Well, as it sounds, it is an installment agreement. An installment agreement is an agreement with the IRS to pay your taxes over time. But this is a partial payment installment agreement, meaning this is an installment agreement that will result in you not paying the full amount you owe the IRS, but only a portion of it. That's why it's called a partial payment installment agreement. So you're going to be making these payments on this installment agreement, whatever it is, every month until your tax debt drops off after the IRS's 10-year collection statute of limitations expires. If you don't know much about the IRS's 10-year collection statute of limitations, I made a whole gosh darn video about it. You can check that out by clicking the link at the top of the screen. There's also a link to that video in the description below. So this can be a pretty good win for taxpayers. Sometimes it's almost as good as an offering compromise. And I'm going to talk about later in this video why someone might qualify for a partial payment installment agreement, but they don't qualify for an offering compromise, because we get that question a lot. But you know, think about it. Let's say you owe $200,000 to the IRS, and we can prove to the IRS that you can only afford to pay them $100 a month. Okay, and let's say there's the full 10 years left that the IRS has to collect, or 120 months. Okay, so take 120 times it by 100. What's that? That's $12,000, right? So if you stay in this PPIA until your tax debt drops off, you'll have paid $12,000 on your $100,000 on tax debt. That's a win, folks. And sometimes it's even better than that, right? Because sometimes, you know, the taxpayers, they're a lot closer to their collection statute expiration date. Maybe there's only 36 months left. So in that case, in this scenario, they'd be paying $100 a month for 36 months. That's $3,600 on their $100,000 of tax debt, with all the rest of it, all $96,400 left, just being written off. So it can be a very beautiful thing for taxpayers, but you do have to qualify for it. Okay, the IRS isn't going to let you only pay $100 a month towards your tax debt if you're rolling in cash and you got all kinds of liquid assets. Sorry, this won't be the resolution option for you. There are others, but this isn't the one for you. You have to prove that paying the IRS in full in an installment agreement would cause you economic hardship, right? The inability to pay your basic necessary living expenses. And there's really two components to this economic hardship concept that the IRS wants you to prove before it'll agree to a partial payment installment agreement with you. First is you got to show the IRS that you don't have accessible equity in assets to pay down your debt. Or if you do, that you have, extinguished those equity and assets to reduce your balance, and then they might, agree to a PPIA on what's left. For example, let's say you're a homeowner, you have equity in your home. Okay. Substantial equity in your home that exceeds your tax debt, even after the IRS gives you the 20% haircut that I've talked about in other videos, blah, blah, blah. Now, this in and of itself would preclude you from a doubtless collectability offering compromise, which is the most common kind of offering compromise. Okay, so offering compromise is off the table, okay, because you have more equity in your home by the IRS's math than exists your tax debt. Okay, however, partial payment installment agreement could still be an option for you if you could show the IRS, hey, I have this equity in my home, but I can't access it. And how do you prove that? Well, you go out to maybe a couple banks and you ask to take cash out of your home, and they say no. And you show these letters to the IRS saying, nope, look, the ABC Bank said that they're not going to let me take cash out of my home because I don't have sufficient disposable income, blah, blah, blah. Or my debt to income is too high, right? Or, they give you a reason, the loan denial. Look, IRS, I can't take equity out of my home. Okay, IRS says, great. Fine, we're going to check that box. Equity and assets has been addressed. You can't take cash, any money out of your home, even though you have substantial equity in it. And that's really one of the major things that separates sometimes offering compromise candidates from PPI candidates is the equity in the home. Okay. Because even if you can't access your equity in your home, it's still counted in an offer in compromise calculation. Okay. If you cannot access the equity in your home, you can prove that to the IRS, they won't count it in a PPIA. But what about other things? Liquid assets, right? Liquid assets will probably count against you with a PPIA. There are some things we can do sometimes for older folks who, you know, they might have some liquid assets in a retirement account. But then, you know, if we can prove out that based on their life expectancy, that the amount they're getting from maybe fixed income sources like Social Security or any pension they may have will not, that alone is not sufficient to cover their basic living expenses. And, you know, for the rest of their life, based on life expectancy tables, they're going to have to draw down a certain amount from their IRA every month. And so we can sometimes, you know, argue that this IRA should be excluded from they don't have access to it to pay the IRS, right? Because they're going to need it to live for the remainder of their life, right? So there's some kind of tricky things we can do. But if you're generally a younger person with significant, you know, liquid assets, that's going to be a tough sell. And the PPIA probably isn't for you because the IRS would just say, hey, just take some money out of your stock accounts, right, and pay us. Why would they agree to a PPIA like this, which will result in a lot of your taxes being written off if you have liquid assets over here to pay off your debt anyway, or a substantial portion of it. The next component is your disposable income, right? Okay, so let's say maybe you don't have, you know, a ton of assets to draw from or any assets to draw from, but you're kind of cash flowing every month, right? The IRS is going to say, well, you should just pay us back in full from your monthly cash flow. And this is really the name of the game here with PPIAs, is it's making your disposable income look as low as possible. Okay. And by disposable income, it doesn't mean that it's a very specific calculation that the IRS has. You can check out the collection information statements like a 433F or a 433A to kind of see what I mean. But basically, the IRS says, okay, what's your gross amount you make every month? Your gross amount, okay, less, you know, the necessary taxes that you're paying on that, either estimated tax payments or your withholding if you're a W-2 employee. Less your a standard amount for food, clothing, miscellaneous items based on your family size. Okay, this is the same amount nationwide for each family size. You know, family of four, this is a bigger amount than a family of, you know, a household of one, right? You can subtract that amount from your net after-tax income. Then they're going to give you an allotment for housing. And it's not necessarily going to be your actual housing expense, okay? Because the IRS has very specific standards for every county in the country that they would expect, you know, a household of four, right? What do they expect that a household of four should pay for housing expenses in Los Angeles County, right? And they have a figure for each and every county in the country. Actually, I'll show you. Right, so local standards, housing and utilities. They update these every year. This one usually in April, right? So let's say you live in Alabama, and let's say you live in Baldwin County, Alabama. I chose that because I didn't know how to say this word. But let's say you live in Baldwin County, Alabama, and you got four people in your house, your family, right? They're going to say that your housing expenses shouldn't pay more than $2,231 a month for housing, right? If you're paying more than that, the IRS isn't going to let you count that against your disposable income in calculating your disposable income every month for installment agreement purposes. Because at the end of this, we want to get a disposable income amount that's very low, because that's the amount the IRS is going to expect you to pay them every month, right, in an installment agreement. And if we get that low enough, right, it'll end up, because that's all the IRS can collect from you is that disposable income. If we get that low enough, we can get to PPIA land, right, meaning that disposable income every month multiplied by the number of months left until your tax that drops off is lower than the amount you owe. That's a PPIA, right? But the IRS limits you on many of your expenses, okay? And housing is a big one, right? So if you live in Baldwin County, Alabama, and your housing expenses is $3,000 a month, right? And this is, you know, your mortgage payment or your rent expense, you know, plus your insurance, you know, plus any other housing expenses you have, plus your utilities, you know, your cell phone bills included in this and any other telephone bills included in this, right? So it's not just like your actual rent payment and your, you know, your mortgage. It's everything to put a roof over your head, right, is including this amount. Let's say it's $3,000 a month. Well, they're going to say, you know, that $3,000 a month, that's too much. So we're not going to let you count your whole housing expense against your disposable income. We're going to cap you at this. Now, there are exceptions to this. If you have like a good reason why your housing expense is so high, you know, maybe you have a child or other family member who has, you know, kind of some special needs or something, and there needs to be special, you know, something in the house to kind of accommodate that. But by and large, they're going to want to cap your expenses at these amounts. They also give you, you know, your vehicle expenses, and they cap those as well at certain amounts. There's like the ownership cost, which is your monthly payment on the vehicle, as well as your operating expenses, which is like gas and, you know, repairs and utilities and things like that. If this is just your debt, they're only going to let you do that for take those expenses for one car. This is joint debt, generally two cars. They're going to give you a standard amount for out-of-pocket medical costs. Whether you pay those or not, they'll give you credit for that. They'll let you take that against your disposable income. However, if you can prove that you pay more than that standard amount, and I can show you that standard amount as well. If you can show that you pay, you know, more than this amount per person based on their age here, and you can document that, right, by showing, hey, we're actually paying this amount every month, and here's, you know, the medical bills, you can take more than that. So they give you an allotment for that. And, you know, those are kind of like the standard expenses, right, which they have like standards for that they're going to like limit you to certain amounts. But there are other expenses you can claim against your disposable income. For example, child independent care, right? Let's say you're a single parent, or you're a two-income household, right? So both parents are working all day, and you have small kids at home, and, you know, they're not going to school yet. Well, someone's got to watch them, right? So you have to pay a daycare, or you know, even a preschool would count in this case. And those expenses can be quite large. We see them for our clients. That is a valid expense. That is an expense that is necessary to your family to produce income, right? Court-ordered payments, child support, right? Other things like that. If you have the court order saying, hey, you have to pay this amount every month, you can count that against your disposable income. Payments for term life insurance, you know, for a reasonable amount. Payments for health insurance for yourself and your dependents. Those are good expenses you can count against your disposable income. Federal student loan payments, to the extent they're being made for yourself. Okay. You know, IRS doesn't, you know, let you count like children's educational bills against your disposable income. So there's some other expenses other than just those basic ones with the standard. But my point is, the name of the game here is getting this disposable income as low as possible, right? And sometimes there's things we recommend to taxpayers, like, hey, you have a paid off car, and, you know, your disposable income is like $600 right now, right, by the IRS's math. If you could go lease a car for like $500 a month, then your disposable income would only be $100 a month, and you'd only have to pay $100 a month to the IRS, which would, you know, result in you only paying, you know, whatever amount until your tax debt drops off. And hey, you're in a PPIA now, right? So, and those are sometimes conversations we have with clients to get that disposable income lower. It's like, would you rather lease a new car instead of driving around your, you know, 15-year-old beater? Or would you rather pay the IRS, right? So, you know, sometimes there's some fun things we can do there, you know, to make recommendations that's going to improve the taxpayer's lifestyle, while also resulting in them paying less amount to the IRS. So this all, you know, sounds great, but I do want to mention a few things about PPIA, right? Now that we've kind of gone through how it works and the math and all that. First thing about the PPIA is the IRS will file a lien to protect its interests if it lets you get into a PPIA. And this kind of makes sense if you think about it, right? The IRS has given you a break on how much you're going to pay them, right? And let's say you have equity in your home, right, that you can't access. Oh, but what if you sell your house, right? Well, then the IRS is going to, you know, it's going to expect that you pay them out of the proceeds of that house, because now you have access to that equity. by converting the asset to cash. And so in order to do that, they'll file a notice of federal tax lien, right, for the amount you owe, basically saying, look, you know, we are, you know, first in line here. If he sells his house or whatever, then we're going to get ours before he gets his, right, or she gets hers. Okay, so it kind of makes sense if you think about it. Another thing to know is that the IRS can review partial payment installment agreements every couple of years. Okay, so if your financial situation changes, let's say you're making significantly more income, or you came into some kind of a windfall or something like that, the IRS could revisit this agreement every couple of years. So a PPA, you know, can be great, but it doesn't necessarily have the finality of an offering compromise, right? Offering compromise, it's accepted. That's it. Of course, you still have to stay in payment and filing compliance, be a perfect taxpayer for the next 5 years, or you'll default your offer. But you know, that's it. The PPIA, you could be removed from it if the IRS believes your financial situation has changed. Now, you might be making more income, sure, but maybe your household size increased. Maybe you had another child. Maybe you have these additional medical expenses now, right? So just because you increase your income doesn't necessarily mean, you know, you can't stay in the PPIA, but you'll have to justify it again, right, to the IRS if they want to revisit the agreement. Another thing about PPIA is just like any other IA with the IRS, you could default your installment agreement if you don't stay current on your tax obligations, right? So it's like, okay, you have this PPIA for this old tax debt, but, you know, starting with the current year, you got to start making those estimated tax payments, paying on time, filing on time, or you could default your IA, right? And that's the case with any IA with the IRS, right? And we see it a lot where, oh man, you know, you didn't pay your taxes for this year, you're going to default the IA. So how do you get a PPIA? Well, you're going to have to talk to ACS, call them up over the phone. They're generally going to want all your financial information, right? It's the financial information that would be on the 433F. They generally don't want it faxed unless you have a certain high enough dollar amount, then they might want it faxed, but you can give them the information over the phone. It's going to go to manager approval. The manager is probably going to have a lot of questions about it, go back and forth. So it can be a pretty lengthy process, right? Because this is the IRS basically agreeing to an installment agreement that will result in the IRS not getting everything that you owe them. Right? So it's kind of a big deal. And there is generally a lot of back and forth there. The IRS will give deadlines to provide them with information. They're going to review the information. They're going to ask about this and that, and what's this number and what's that. So it's not an easy thing. Let me just put it that way. And that's just if you're dealing with ACS. If you have a revenue officer assigned, man, they're going to go over everything with a fine-tooth comb. I mean, sometimes the ACS managers do as well. But if you have a revenue officer assigned, it's kind of like, ooh, it's kind of like next level now. But basically, it's just arguing your case to the IRS based on your numbers, your financial situation, right? That's what really tax relief is. And the IRS, they don't always make it easy for you. So that's the PPIA explained. I hope this was helpful. We do routinely get our clients into PPIAs. If you'd like a free consultation with us at Choice Tax Relief, you can book one using the link in the description below. You can also call 866-8000-TAX to book your free consultation. I do have some other tax relief videos here on the left-hand side of the screen. And thank you so much for watching, folks, and I'll see you in the next video. Bye-bye.